tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Katia Gunther. Katia is a professor of gender and sexuality studies at the University of California, Riverside, where she has been a faculty member since 2008. A sociologist by training, her research focuses on human-animal relationships, feminist and women's activism, and social movements and state policy. She is committed to improving knowledge about how and why inequalities of gender, race, class, disability, and species reproduce so reliably and what we can do to challenge these inequalities. She is dedicated to better lives for human and non-human animals and regularly works with animal rights and welfare organizations, as well as the organizations focused on human needs. Her experience volunteering at a high-intake animal shelter in the Los Angeles area led her to turn her analytic attention to the challenges of animal sheltering and ultimately to write The Lives and Deaths of Shelter Animals, which won the Distinguished Book Award given by the American Sociological Association Section on Animals and Society in 2021. Most recently, she is co-editor of When Animals Die, Examining Justifications and Envisioning Justice. Her scholarly work has been published in numerous journals also. Professor Gunther is currently engaged in research on the politics around two different seeming types of felids who call Los Angeles home, community cats and cougars, more commonly referred to as mountain lions in Southern California. Gunther lives in Los Angeles County with her human life partner, three larger dogs and two small cats. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Katia, first and foremost, how'd you become so passionate about cats? And it sounds like it's all kinds of cats, not just community cats.
It's true. I think I'm just a broad animal lover in general. I actually started out in life, unfortunately, catless. I came from a household with family members who were allergic to cats. So I was a dog child in my youth. But as soon as I was in a situation where I was able to adopt a cat in my college years, I did so. And I've been consistently in the company of cats and dogs at home since then.
So I'm going to just start right at the beginning. You have this journey. You are now very heavily involved in research, much of it surrounding issues that pertain to community cats. How did you get exposed to the TNR world, the trap, neuter, return world? How did you find out about trap, neuter, return? And what kind of an impression did it make upon you?
Yeah, my first interaction with trap, neuter, return actually occurred in the context of an animal shelter. So it's been a little over a decade now already. Time flies. I started volunteering at a high intake public animal shelter not too far from where I live. And that volunteering experience actually brought me into engaging in research on animal shelters. And you mentioned I wrote a book called The Lives and Deaths of Animal Shelters that really analyzes how systems and practices of inequalities that humans create shape what happens inside of a shelter for both humans, but also for animals. That shelter, during the time that I was volunteering there, received cats, of course, and a lot of them, but really did very little to serve those cats. While I was doing my field work, about 80 to 85% of cats who came into the shelter were killed there. And I was especially troubled by the shelter's policy around what they called feral cats, what we're calling community cats, that any cat who really showed even the slightest sign of hostility towards humans, and of course, in a shelter environment, even many domesticated house cats will do that, would be deemed a so-called feral cat and would be placed in the queue for being killed. And I knew that there had to be a better alternative, right, to this model and to addressing the plight of community cats. And it was through people who were volunteering particularly intensively with the cats at the shelter, that I came into contact with individuals who were engaged in TNR. And when I first started hearing more about TNR, I quickly recognized that this was possibly a much more reasonable solution for engaging with these cats instead of impounding them just for the purpose of ending their lives in the shelter system. I was really impressed when I met people who were engaged in TNR. It was clear to me from the beginning that quite consistently, they were putting a tremendous amount of personal labor into their TNR work, but there was a very high level of dedication. And I'll say honestly that this is true for almost everyone I've met whose lives kind of intersect at this particular animal shelter. The volunteers who volunteer at the shelter also are such dedicated people, really engaging in what other folks might think of as sort of dirty or undesirable or emotionally upsetting work when they continue to do it. And TNR active people really gave me that same kind of impression that they were doing something that not everyone around them necessarily understood or even approved of, but they were continuing to engage in that activity because they saw that they were bettering the lives of the cats living in the colonies that they were caring for and doing TNR in.
And I just to go on the record, you're from the Los Angeles area, and I'd love to say that TNR is understood and appreciated in the same way all across the country, but every area is very different. So there are challenges that you may have in the Los Angeles area that I certainly don't see in New England, or we don't see in Florida or Georgia and other parts of the country. We have some of these baseline issues. I think capacity for spay-neuter appointments is probably a baseline conversation that's all across the country. But then there are some other challenges. There's cultural challenges that differ between different regions and all of that kind of different conversations. There's a lot of commentary. So you've written this book. You've got a chapter about community cats in this book. And there's a lot of conversation about different opinions about spaying cats. And your bedrock throughout it all is based on reproductive justice, I think, is a phrase that you use a lot. And I think we need to do a little bit of definitions here first before we get into the real context of the chapter. So if you could define for me what reproductive justice is, as well as what your definition of community cats is, which you touched upon that earlier, maybe touch on those two and then talk about the premise of this chapter in your book.
My chapter is in the book, When Animals Die, Examining Justifications and Envisioning Justice, which is an anthology that myself and Julian Keenan co-edited. And the chapter that I wrote focuses on really trying to promote the idea that a reproductive justice framework exists already among people who are doing TNR in the Los Angeles area, but that they may be more successful in getting increased support for the work that they're doing if they were to tout the reproductive justice framework more clearly or more vocally than they currently do in their interactions with the public, including through different types of public service messaging. The reproductive justice framework is a framework that emerged from women of color in the United States who were concerned about how so much of the conversation about reproduction and reproductive freedoms in our country focus on abortion politics specifically. And they wanted to expand the idea of reproductive justice so that it would include and acknowledge that the ability to reproduce safely and securely and with choice isn't just the choice about whether to terminate a pregnancy, but it's also about the choice to carry out a pregnancy. And it's also about the ability to know that you will have safety and security for the new life form that you bring into the world once that being is born. So there's a very strong emphasis in reproductive justice about the safety of parenting human children in environments that are secure, where basic needs can be met, and where the environment in terms of health is also favorable for raising children. And I think the reproductive justice framework is really useful for thinking about community cats and TNR because it opens us up to engaging with the lives of the cats, both before sterilization or their spay neuter, but also afterwards, and especially gives us a way to talk about and conceptualize the sometimes contentious or controversial practice of engaging in spay surgeries on pregnant female cats, or what is sometimes referred to as abortive sterilization, to frame abortive sterilization as a reproductive justice concern, because we know that if those kittens come into being, that they are not going to be afforded the positive kinds of life chances that will allow them to flourish in our world. You'd asked also about community cats. And I think about community cats as being really just any free roaming cat, a cat who doesn't seem to, and that's, I would sort of asterisk seem, doesn't seem to have a human guardian who is responsible for them. We do know, of course, that many community cats actually have feeders or caregivers who are providing some type of care to them, hence the caveat that they seem to not have a human owner or guardian in the conventional sense that we think of with house cats. And some community cats are cats who are friendly to humans. They may have been recently lost or abandoned. And others are cats who multi-generationally have not had contact with humans and therefore are quite hostile to humans. And as you mentioned, Stacey, there is a lot of variation, I believe, across the country in how these cats live and what kinds of opportunities that they have for flourishing. And Los Angeles is a tough place to be a community cat for a lot of different reasons, which we can talk more about.
Yeah, and I certainly also want to just ask your thoughts about stepping it up into the sort of, I'll call it the spay neuter food chain. To, you had mentioned in the chapter that 85% of households, their cats are spayed or neutered. There's 15% of households that are not. And I go on my soapbox about Adam and Eve, and this is how community cat colonies get started. We have Adam and Eve, and they have originated from someone's home, and they have not been able to, for whatever reason, been able to get neutered or spayed. Thus, I don't want to live with an unneutered male cat, and I don't want to live with an unspayed female cat. Therefore, because of behavior or because of financial issues, because of moving, because of a variety of things, those cats end up outside and Adam and Eve meet each other. And so where does reproductive justice play in that scenario also? Is it even more valuable to us to try and get at those cats, to get them spayed or neutered, work with some of maybe these cultural challenges to get higher up on that pecking order, to be able to get those cats sterilized so that we're not even faced with these challenges at the TNR level?
Yeah, no, I absolutely think that is a piece of what needs to be brought into thinking about the reproductive strategies for engaging with community cats. As long as we have a significant, I think 15%, and that's a statistic that's not just Los Angeles. So in LA, I would have to look it up, but it might be somewhat different than that. And I would guess probably higher percent is not spayed or neutered among so-called house cats. That population of animals, they are, as you said, sort of the starter partners of these large families and colonies that then emerge. And we do, unfortunately, in this environment, really struggle with access to low-cost or free spay-neuter services, particularly in certain communities. There is better outreach, I think, today than certainly there was 10 years ago, but there are still challenges. There are obstacles. Generally, we don't see a lot of resistance among guardians to getting animals spayed or neutered, simply a lack of awareness and or ability about how to actually get it done.
Are you passionate about making spay-neuter services more accessible? Join us for the 2024 United Spay Alliance online conference on October 12th and 13th, hosted by the Community Cats Podcast and the United Spay Alliance. This two-day virtual event brings together animal welfare experts offering presentations on starting low-cost spay-neuter programs, fundraising, community outreach, and more. Learn what's working from professionals and volunteers and get inspired with new strategies to help control the cat population. Register today at communitycatspodcast.com/spayallday and be part of the change.
Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today.
Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
Talking about the rights of the community, and then I see the sort of balance between the importance that cats have access to this sterilization resource, but we also have the economics and the affordability, which is extremely challenging. And we now in animal welfare, we have all these pulling, conflicting conversations about we shouldn't be pulling cats out of this community and then spay neuter them and adopt them into another community that might need resources. So there's this questioning the redistribution of our feline populations, as well as, you know, then we have return to field, we have trap neuter return with a monitor, manage, whatever you want to use that M word. Vaccinate, TN, VR. We have so much lingo going around, even I can't keep up with regards to these words out here. At the end of the day, we need to just keep it super simple. You're looking at this point of, we want to spay these pregnant cats because I see 30 kittens in a dumpster. I know half those kittens aren't going to make it to the first 6 months. And it's a rough, rough life out there for kittens. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm always advocating we do not want to see those kittens out there. We're going to put these pregnant cats in foster care or something like that. We're going to run out of our resources very quickly. Now, you were in a clinic and you experienced a lot of spay neuters going on for pregnant spays. And I'm going to go on the record. I believe you're a firm believer of spay when you can to the best of your capabilities. And focus our efforts on the reactionary process of going out there and dealing with those kittens, as many kittens as possible, because we have to, because they're the ones that are in active suffering right now. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I would definitely concur with that.
But there are challenges. And so what are some of those challenges in your research that you saw around this topic? Why would we not all be on the same platform with regards to this?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think maybe I want to separate what my initial research findings are into two groups. I primarily have been conducting research with individuals who are engaged in doing TNR. And I refer to these people broadly as community cat advocates because they take on a lot of different roles. It's not only TNR. A lot of them are also fostering cats or kittens in their home. A lot of them are attending public hearings or communicating in other ways with public officials about policy issues that impact community cats. Some of them are fundraising for community cat-focused organizations or for spay-neuter services. Some of them are transporting cats, right? There's all sorts of different activities. Some of them are also feeding cat colonies or caring for cat colonies. So there are a lot of different roles that these persons take on. At this stage, I have not done research speaking with people who are not caring for cats, but who live in the communities where the cats live. But I hear about them a great deal through the filter of the community cat advocates, right? So I want to note that's an important caveat, that it's through their filter. And through the filter of community cat advocates, they do encounter some people who resist the idea of cats that are living in or around their homes or apartment buildings being spayed or neutered because they hold on to some type of religious or culturally based belief that sterilization is violating a divine plan for the lives of these cats. Some of them believe that the procedure will place the animals at risk for health problems or that they're going to die if they're taken away. Some of them see the step is too little. They don't want the cats to be TNR'd. They want the cats to be culled. A different kind of response. So there's that sort of set of resistance issues. then what was really interesting to me was that in the course of my interviews and observations with people who are doing TNR themselves, there is a subset, and they're a minority, but they are still present, of people doing TNR who are very uncomfortable with abortive spaying. And these individuals overwhelmingly, 100%, I should say, self-identified as being pro-choice and as supporting reproductive rights and reproductive justice. So for them, it wasn't part of a bigger life framework, right? That they were Catholic and there was something religious that was guiding them to have this particular view about aborting fetal or embryonic kittens in the course of a spay surgery. What emerged as more salient for them is that most of them were doing intensive fostering of very young neonatal kittens. And it was hard for them to identify the line of difference between when a fetal kitten is still in utero versus the fetal kitten that they're bottle feeding and engaging in such intensive care labor for. Everyone listening who's taken care of bottle feeding young kittens surely knows what I'm referring to. And it was just hard for them when cats appeared very, what they would describe as very pregnant, to not see continuity between what was happening inside mom and what was happening outside in the world. And that was very emotional for them. And so at least one of my respondents had a history that she shared with me of what she called hiding pregnant cats. If she would trap a cat who was significantly pregnant, she wouldn't bring it to the clinic the following morning as planned for an appointment. Rather, she would disappear the cat into a network of friends who weren't otherwise involved with cat rescue so that cat could give birth and then rehome those kittens. And she was very much aware that if other people in the TNR community found out about this, they would not be happy with her. And she definitely also expressed her own ethical conundrum and concern, because she is very much aware of the suffering that cats experience on the streets in Los Angeles. And yet at the same time, she couldn't quite separate her experiences fostering these very young kittens from what she imagined these kittens were like when they were still in the fetal state.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think about, for our listeners, what is a great takeaway from this conversation? Number one, it's a conversation that we shouldn't be afraid of having. At an organizational level, at an operations level, we all need to be on the same page organizationally on this topic, regardless of where we fall in it. We need to just acknowledge and admit who we are and have a statement for the organization, what the protocols are, who makes the decisions, and go from there. In the 30 years that I've been involved in animal welfare, I have been involved with fostering pregnant feral cats. And there have been lots of scenarios I can share where it did not work out very well, to be perfectly frank and honest. And certainly we've spayed a lot of pregnant feral cats over the years, and we've had a spay everybody policy. And now in New England, there are several organizations where if you have a friendly cat that's very pregnant, they're going to have that cat deliver the kittens and the kittens will be put up for adoption. And many of the cats that are now trapped in New England, because so many of the generational feral colonies have aged out. Most of these cats are friendly strays that have either lost, become abandoned, and that kind of thing. And that's a whole nother show in itself. But what I'm trying to say for folks that are listening, this is a tough conversation to have, but it's one we shouldn't be scared of having within our organizations. And we need to acknowledge what sort of resources we have available, what our situation is like, what our collaborators are in our communities. We might have collaborators. There's neonatal groups all around. There may be collaborators for the kittens, but we have to really ensure that we are serving the needs of our community and we are resource limited. And if we are faced with that, to consider spaying, especially pregnant feral cats, think very hard about the decision not to do it, because it is extremely stressful on that mom cat that is truly feral. It's extremely stressful. So that's my only word to the wise on that one. With regards to the other issues, it's just clarity. It's clarity And I know veterinarians even are not in agreement on this topic. Did you speak with any veterinarians when you were researching this chapter to get their thoughts on this issue?
I did, but the veterinarians who I spoke with were all involved in high volume spay and neuter for cats and dogs. And so they were people who were familiar with and were regularly practicing the aborted spaying of both cats and dogs. And I think your observation about organizational coherence and having conversations within organizations about this topic is really important. I myself participated in trainings to learn how to perform TNR as part of my research, and I did that in multiple organizational settings. And none of those organizations talked at all about pregnant cats being spayed. There was sometimes information provided about how to identify a pregnant cat and or to identify how close they might be to giving birth, but there wasn't actually a conversation about what happens in the clinic and why proceeding with an aborted spay is most often in the best interest of the cat and of the colony and of the kittens who are not going to be born. And I would love to see that incorporated because I think, and at least in Los Angeles, the network of TNR is such that a lot of people aren't actually really formally tied to organizations. So a lot of folks are just doing TNR on their own. And the one place where they come into contact with messaging is through the clinic setting. And that's usually the organization that's provided them with TNR training in the first place. That's where they're renting or borrowing traps from, right? So that's where that communication could happen. And so I would love to see that happen. Another thing I talk about in the chapter was my experience observing inside of the clinic and watching the surgeries. And I realize, of course, that there are logistical challenges to carrying this out for every person who does TNR. But I think it would be incredible if people who wanted to, who had an open mind about it, would be permitted to be inside of the clinic for some period of time to observe the spay-neuter process. A lot of people who are involved in TNR have never seen the surgeries. They don't necessarily know what it looks like just for a spay-neuter in general, but specifically for an abortive spay, what that looks like. And for me, in any case, I found it to be very reassuring and comforting in the sense of showing me the care with which the cats, all of the cats, but especially pregnant female cats, were being treated, the care and respect that was afforded to the fetal kittens, to the way in which the veterinarians handle the medical process or the veterinary process of removing the fetal kittens in such a way that there is no perception that they're suffering from that process. And I know in the abortion politics surrounding humans in the United States that there has been a great deal of consternation about the fact that most Americans don't have any understanding of what abortions look like with human embryos and fetuses either. Usually if we have that exposure, it comes from pro-life organizations that are showing images that are not representative of what a typical abortion actually looks like. And I think this is a situation where knowing and seeing more can actually help increase support for what is being done.
So I do not know of a resource for video of an abortive spay, but spays and neuters, there are at the United Spay Alliance's website on their resources page, there are quite a few videos that are available in the public domain of what a spay and what a neuter, high quality, high volume spay neuter looks like and how long it actually takes and that. So we'll make sure we get those specific links in the show notes. And then, and there's a variety of different types of spays. There's the abdominal spay, there's a flank spay. So we have videos of all these different kinds of procedures that folks can see to be able to, I mean, for veterinarians to see what some of the techniques are, but then also just for all of us who just want to know what's happening behind those closed doors, so to speak. And again, that with knowledge, there can be power in just trying to understand some perspective and just understanding how quick a high quality, high volume spay neuter procedure is. I mean, the neuter, you're like, oh my goodness, I blinked.
It just happened. Right. It's over.
and it's over. Exactly. So you have to make sure you're careful to watch that video or else you're going to miss it. Hopefully down the road, I do have a dream that hopefully our certified veterinary technicians will be doing our cat castrations going forward And it will be a huge benefit to the demand for extra appointments out there. And we can just go neutering like crazy. And it'll be the certified veterinary technicians that are going to save the world and just take care of getting all these cats, these male cats done. The veterinarians can focus on getting the spays done. And if you are in the northern part of the country, I will recommend there are many organizations that do stop their trapping in the winter months because of the cold. And if you're not going to use appointments for trapping, then use those appointments for the Adams or the Eves of the world. Get those Eves in February. Get those Eves in January before they come out of the house. Do an owned spay event in the winter months. If you're not doing TNR, it doesn't mean you have to stop the spay neuter. You can keep doing spay neuter. You're just serving a different public, but yet it's the same potential crowd that might also get pregnant and have kittens and that kind of thing. So just keep that momentum going and you'll be able to do that. If folks are interested in finding out more in the work and the research that you're doing, how would they do that?
Probably the most efficient thing to do would be to visit my website, which is www. And unfortunately, it's my name, which isn't the most intuitive spelling for a lot of folks. So I'll just spell it out here, but I imagine it will also appear in the show notes. It's Katja M. Gunther, so KatjaMGuenther.com. And I have information there about how to participate in the research. Since this is still ongoing, if there are folks listening from the Southern California region who are doing TNR, I'm always happy to make new connections and find out about new areas of activity. And there's also information there and links to various publications, some of which you can download right from the site.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I just appreciate the opportunity to speak with everyone, and I'm really grateful to everyone who is doing this work. Community cat advocacy, as I have learned in the LA area, can be a tough road to hoe. And it's a really admirable one to keep working on. And I believe that through TNR and also through rethinking how we organize our lived environments in cities, that we can start realizing more cat-conducive environments for community cats.
Well, that's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show. You just said a whole nother topic right there. So we'll have to have you back again. Thank you so much for being a guest today. And again, we will have you back on the show.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.